You're listening to highlights of the Creative Process and One Planet podcast interview with film producer and director Rebecca Tickle. The podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
So for the last two decades, I've made over 20 films about the environment, starting with talking about oil and carbon emissions, not really an exciting subject to make a film about. And then we switched to soil regeneration. So we went from making films about oil to making films about dirt. And we kind of joked that the only thing more boring that you could make films about than oil would be soil. And then those films, Kiss the Ground and now Common Ground, which talk about how we can stabilize the climate, how we can reverse climate change, how we can grow nutrient-dense food, how we can help farmers make a profit through biodiversity and regenerative practices and principles. So we've been successful at taking these stories that are kind of boring, but that are so important to our livelihood and well-being. And so as we were on this journey, we started to learn about insects and pollinators. And I became a beekeeper and I started keeping bees. And then our neighbor started spraying neonicotinoids. And I didn't know what a neonicotinoid was, but one teaspoon of a neonicotinoid can kill billions and billions of bees in one setting. We're spraying gallons and gallons of this, and it's wiping out bee populations. In fact, on farms and in rural areas, there's been a massive decline in insects and in pollinators. It used to be that you would drive down the road and you would get your windshield covered in insects, but now you don't. And it's because of that loss of diversity, that loss of insect life that's so critical to the functioning of farming and growing food and land management. But funny enough, in cities and in urban areas where people are planting flowers and planting things that pollinators love, they're finding a resurgence of bees and pollinators. I didn't really appreciate bees until I became a farmer. And then I started to understand how essential bees are for our food. They pollinate 70% of our food, and that feeds 90% of the world. So I think we just underestimate the power of these pollinators. And also, we've focused on the honeybee, and we've ignored largely the over 20,000 species of indigenous bees and pollinators that exist. So there's just this whole world of insects that is what creates the color in our food. It's what creates the flavor in our food. It's part of our biodiversity, and it's essential for human life on Earth to be able to understand how to protect these bees and these pollinators. Everybody that is a farmer loves soil. They want to be a good land steward. And a lot of farmers have been misinformed through educations at land-grant universities, through propaganda spread by chemical companies that have infiltrated our regulatory systems and have skewed the science to make it seem as though it's not harmful for human life and for the environment to use these neonicotinoids and neurotoxins on our food. But the fact of the matter is that these poisons, and they are poisons, they have a skull and the crossbone on the label. Many of them say fatal if inhaled. They were designed to kill people during wartime. And the way that they're applying them, at least where I live in Ojai, California, is with World War II fan sprayers. And then they take these chemicals and they go up into the air and they volatilize and then they drift for days and days. And where we live in Ojai, it's the Chumash word for the nest. So we have mountains all around us in a low inversion layer. So if you're spraying hundreds of thousands of pounds of these neurotoxins designed to kill, and then they're being volatilized up into the air, people can't see it. And most of the time, people are not notified that these chemicals are even there. But then you start to see clusters of people with health issues like we see here in Ojai. There was a place called Cancer Alley in Louisiana that Aaron Brockovich brought a lot of attention to, but we jokingly, and this is very morbid, call Ojai, instead of Cancer Alley, we call it the Cancer Valley, because we have like a whole street where people are dying from cancer and their dogs have seizures and they have all kinds of neurological issues. And it's just what comes along with the use of these chemical sprays. And so it disrupts the biology and the functionality of any ecosystem. And farmers have been duped. And they're the ones that are paying the biggest price, because there's a suicide epidemic in the U.S. that farmers have a 5 times higher likelihood of committing suicide than any other profession. I attribute that not just to the bank loans that force them to continue to spray that and the dwindling profits due to a focus for so many decades through the Green Revolution, yield and profit, yield and profit, yield and profit. Meanwhile, the input costs for these chemicals and fertilizers goes up and up and up, and the profit margin goes down and down and down. And the system itself begins to fail because of degradation of the soil, and it begins to fail because of desertification. And then you also have these farmers that are the first ones in contact with these neurotoxins. And we are a reflection of the soil. The biology in the soil is a reflection of the biology in our gut. And if you don't have healthy living soil, then you're not going to have a healthy living person. You're not going to have a healthy living ecosystem. And that begins to wear on your mental health as well, because our mental health is very much connected to the soil and to our physical health. And so if you have chronic exposure to neurotoxins over time, that also is going to degrade your health, your mental health, your spiritual health. And then it creates this big chasm of, I'm doing good in the world, I'm feeding the world, I'm protecting people, I'm an American farmer. And then you can't hear it when people say maybe the chemicals that you're using are poison, because it just so goes against your worldview and what you're about and who you are. It feels like an attack. You can't hear it. And then ultimately, it's you, the farmer, who pays the biggest price for that, and your children and your grandchildren. There's such an intelligence to nature that it knows how to be resilient. We thought that we could go in and do it better. And when we did that, we tried to mechanize this entire system. We industrialized it into this linear system that doesn't make any sense. We're growing animals to grow food that we can't eat so that we can ship it halfway around the world. It's a system that doesn't make sense. The way that we heal and the way that we regenerate and the way that we stabilize the climate and reverse climate change, it literally is 1 inch and 1 acre at a time. It's through communities waking up to the power of soil and the power of biodiversity to be able to not only sequester carbon for all of us. The oceans can't handle any more carbon absorption. It's acidifying and heating. The only place that we can take that teraton of carbon that we've emitted is to put it back into the soil. When we do that, you create thriving ecosystems, you create biodiversity, you create water infiltration, which can help massively to reduce the catastrophes from flooding. It helps reverse desertification, so it staves off droughts through being able to hold water like a sponge. And it promotes biodiversity. And that's how we have resilience through not having just one of everything. Because when you have just one thing, you're susceptible to any kind of disease or blight coming in and wiping you completely out. It's through that genetic diversity that allows for nature to thrive and move around the nutrients that it needs. Often we go in and we just want to spray Roundup on everything instead of getting curious about, well, what are the weeds trying to tell us about what this soil needs? Or what are these insects trying to tell us about this particular environment? And so it's about learning how to give up this idea that we need to control nature and instead learning how to use nature as stewards of that land to be able to manage it in nature's image. The biggest change that needs to happen is here. It's in our minds that it can be done. And it can be done. Within 5 to 10 years, we can stabilize the climate through regenerative agriculture and through how we choose to eat and through how we choose to protect what's wild and biodiverse. And that's what our films talk about. So if you haven't seen them yet, I encourage you to watch Kiss the Ground and Common Ground on Prime Video. It gives you sort of a crash course in regeneration. Kiss the Ground has been responsible for helping to put this idea of regeneration into the nomenclature. It's helped bring this message to the mainstream. We're so lucky to have been able to get Kiss the Ground done when we did. It took us 7 years and it came out in 2020. And it's made a huge difference in terms of transitioning acreage to regeneration. So just since 2020, where in North America, we had about 3 million acres in transition to regeneration. Here we are in 2025, and now there's over 55 million acres in transition to regeneration. And our goal is 100 million acres in North America, because that's the tipping point. That's the bar. You know, Malcolm Gladwell says, if you reach 10%, then that's the unstoppable amount that you need to reach to be able to create true change. And so if we can reach that 100 million acres in North America, that is the tipping point for us to be able to make this change into regeneration and for the world, because we're entering the age of regeneration. That's what's coming. And so for the people who are the first adopters, you're going to see the most tremendous change and have the biggest benefit, because this is the way that everything is moving right now. We're all moving towards regeneration, whether we're on board with it or not. Yeah. They do say, actually, that it could be done within 3 to 5 years. I mean, that would require a massive amount of organization immediately. Yes. That would be like governments and countries getting on board. But if you look at like the COP, the conference of the parties, they haven't even been talking about regeneration. And they've been holding these conferences in places that are oil-rich countries and then talking about reducing carbon emissions. I realized I jumped right into soil regeneration as a solution for climate change without describing how that works. But like you just said, soil has the power through photosynthesis to draw down carbon from the atmosphere. It's called biosequestration. It takes that carbon down into the roots and then it turns it into healthy humus. And that is the food for life in the soil. It needs that carbon. And so that is the purpose of plants. They breathe in the carbon, they breathe out the oxygen. We all learned that in grade school. What we didn't learn is that as we've been watching carbon levels increase in our atmosphere, and we've been watching the ocean try to absorb as much of it as it can and become acidified as a result, with great losses to our ocean habitat and coral reefs, we've forgotten that simple tool of the solution that's right beneath our feet, called soil health and soil regeneration. When you build life in soil, that's soil organic matter, when you build that life, it exponentially increases the amount of carbon that the plants are drawing down. And then it has these benefits. Not only does it draw down carbon, it's the only place that we can put that teraton of carbon that we've emitted. There's only one place for it, and it's in the soil. So why isn't that the main conversation of every climate conversation, the solution? About that teraton of carbon that we put in our atmosphere. There's only one place for it. So our conversation, our job is to be talking about biosequestration. Because when you do biosequestration, what happens is you not only bring the soil back to life, you are creating nutrient-dense food. You're giving plants the ability to work in symbiosis with the soil that it co-evolved with. That then allows for it not only to be resilient and have a strong immune system, but also to absorb nutrition, which in turn we then eat and absorb that nutrition. Like I said, we're a reflection of the soil. It also creates soil infiltration, which allows it to be a sponge and it can store water. I'm speaking from the place of it changed my life too when I got this information, and it changed my world. It changed my family's farming practices. It's changing my community because I'm also being a local advocate for transitioning. I'm doing on the ground what I'm asking people to do in their own areas as well. I've been called a hysterical terrorist for asking questions, and I'm also helping to get the laws changed. We have to be willing to be disruptors in our work, in our families, in our communities. We have to be willing to ask the hard questions from love, because regeneration is all about love. It's all about health and wealth and nature. So I think everybody, where you're at, it's perfect. You are in the perfect place to be able to become a leader and carry this message of regeneration out to your community, into your workplace, into your home, and to be a model of what that transition looks like. Yes, we need the government to be there, but they're not representing us, you know. And are they? Okay, let's be honest. They're not. They're representing the chemical companies that keep them in office. Let's be honest about how the system works. That's the truth. Are they really working for us and representing us? No, they're representing the chemical companies. That's the truth. That's why I think it's going to be the people. And then they're going to be the reflection of change. Where our money goes, that's our vote. That's probably our most important vote, is where we put our money, how we support our local farmers. When it comes to what's possible through government action and policy, because it's an important part of it. But I'm just never going to rely on that. Like, as a filmmaker, I'm not capturing someone's image. I'm not taking their picture. How, like, approaching everything through a regenerative mindset, not one of like a colonizer mindset. And so that's been like, how can we bring regeneration into everything that we touch and do and say? So powerful. So there's so many ways to access the power of regeneration. And my own dad, who now sends me photos of his regenerative organic vegetables that he grows. He never said, "You're right." He never said, "Oh, this informed me so much. Thank you for this information." But what he does do is he shows me the food that he grows in healthy soil.
We hope you've enjoyed this program and listening to the highlights of this podcast. If you'd like to get involved in One Planet Podcast or learn more about environmental projects, click on the subscribe button. Thank you for listening.